again. Oh, please.
The Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
Larry from That Larry Show.
For men with balls.
Take off your pants.
Larry, get into bed now.
Larry.
Larry. Larry.
Of all the holidays on the calendar, New Year's is my least favorite. No, wait, that's a stupid phrase. Everyone uses least favorite? That's like saying shit-flavored ice cream is your least favorite. It's no favorite at all. And New Year's mostly sucks. It's packed with hubris. How the hell does anyone know if it will be a happy New Year? Like any year, some days will be great and some will suck. I once spent New Year's in Barbados. They do it a lot better there than we do it here. They don't even call it New Year's Eve. They call it Old Year's Night. Makes a lot more sense to celebrate making it through the previous trip around the sun than assuming the next will be fantastic. It's kind of tempting fate, isn't it? In Barbados, instead of putting on idiotic party hats and blowing noisemakers, people dress up in their most glamorous outfits, tuxedos and slinky gowns and high heels, and they take a stroll down Main Street at midnight. Look at us. We made it. And we still look good. Damn good. That's the right attitude. Yeah, people drank, but there weren't drunken idiots puking in the street, as in Times Square or Las Vegas. Happy New Year is kind of presumptuous and dangerous. Wishing someone a Merry Christmas makes sense. Few people say it more than a day or three before Christmas. So, barring some unexpected calamity, one can reasonably expect a Merry Christmas. But an entire year of happiness? That's begging for catastrophe. Some people call New Year's Eve amateur night, and that's fairly accurate. When novice drinkers get loaded and hurl on their own shoes or crash cars or aspirate in their sleep and slip the earthly bonds via their own stupidity. A lot of people feel they have to experience something fantastic and momentous at the turn of the new year. So they crowd Times Square with hundreds of thousands of other fools in freezing temperatures. Often with precipitation, braving pickpockets and gropers and drunks, just to watch an electric ball slide down a pole, same as it has since 1907. If they're lucky, they might catch a glimpse of Ryan Seacrest and his TV pals up in that heated balcony, looking down on them all like the Pope of New Year's Eve. Maybe Seacrest should bless them. You know damn well he's laughing at them. And if they can't view Seacrest, they might get a glimpse at some other exciting luminaries, New York City government officials hand-picked, people guaranteed to dazzle and delight. In recent years, those have included the winners of high school essay contests, Bill and Hillary Clinton, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, the founder of the hashtag MeToo movement, and reviled ex-mayor Bill de Blasio's equally reviled wife. As of this moment, this year's guest is TBA, but doubtless you'll be tempted to madness. The New Year's shit show in Times Square is absolutely free, so maybe you get what you pay for. In Las Vegas, where nothing is free except dashed hopes, people prefer to buy their New Year's kicks. This December 30th, Vegas has many offerings from Adele to Bruno Mars. Tickets to either of them start at about $500. Although, if you want to see Adele on Saturday, March 25th, those tickets start at $1,720. Yeah, I know they drop the price as the date approaches and seats are left unsold, but still, $1,700 as an opening bid. In case you missed drag queen story hour at your local preschool, Vegas has that covered. Good seats at RuPaul's Drag Race are about $300. If that's a bit steep, Bob the Drag Queen is doing his show for a budget-friendly $80. Could there really be much difference between the two? To the credit of each and/or Las Vegas, you gotta be 18 to see those shows. A Las Vegas website gives a primer on how to have a great time in Sin City. This is what it says.
Plan ahead. You don't want to get turned away, or worse, taken to jail, because you brought something you shouldn't to the Strip on New Year's Eve. Revelers on the Strip are not allowed to bring strollers, carts, luggage, coolers or backpacks, purses, or any other type of bag larger than 12 by 6 by 12 inches. Drinking is allowed, but glass or metal containers are not. Even though recreational cannabis is legal in Nevada, public consumption is not. Conceal and carry laws are complicated. Casinos request that firearms aren't brought on the property, so just leave them home. And no matter what, don't even think about celebratory gunfire. It's the quickest way to wind up in jail.
Unquote. Well, there you have it. They mentioned jail twice in one little paragraph, plus guns and liquor. What could go wrong? As you slide into your 20s, New Year's Eve start to blend together, don't they? Few stand out in memory. Is that why people feel the need to go apeshit on New Year's Eve? To manufacture a vivid memory? Make at least one night of the year stand out from the tedium of work, dinner, and sleep? The New Year's Eve I remember best actually did have gunfire and liquor and an overdose, although I was not a participant, just a casual observer. It occurred shortly after I met the always fascinating Tony Spumante. Tony was the boyfriend and subsequent husband of my girlfriend's best friend. Tony also happened to be the son of the number two or three guy in one of New York's famed mafia families. Spumante was not his real name, and I won't divulge which family, but it was definitely not the Columbos or Bonanos. Tony and I were the same age. I was just out of college and watching every dollar. Tony had a brand new Coupe de Ville, a nice home in Queens, a vacation home in the Poconos. He owned several dry cleaning stores and a few other businesses I never asked him about. Was he dangerous? I only saw him angry once, which I chronicled in episode 45, Halloween with a Mob. You can find that in the October 2017 tab at thatlarryshow.com. Now, Tony's bodyguards, however, well, they were very dangerous, as were many of his other friends and associates. Tony and I got along really well. We became good friends. He could be hysterically funny, with a sharp, sarcastic wit. He was also generous, and had, I believe, a good heart. We had some adventures together, but that New Year's Eve, well, I was the first, and it was beyond belief. Here's how it happened, as I related it in the second episode of this show, New Year's with a Mob, way back in December 2016. Bodyguard Mikey looked like a cruiserweight, well put together, with a permanent expression on his face that said, "Don't fuck with me." Joey, on the other hand, Joey looked like the missing link in a three-piece suit. Now, Joey was only around 5'10" or 5'11", but he tipped the scales at 245, and when I say he looked like an ape, I'm not exaggerating, not even a little. His inseam was maybe 15 inches, so he moved like a weeble. And knuckle dragging? Yeah. He could tie his shoes and not bend his spine. And those hands, well, Seth Meyers would give his career to have the hair from the backs of Joey's hands on his head. And Joey's neck, well, there really was no neck. His head just kind of grew out of his shoulders. So I'm sitting there, and cruiserweight bodyguard Mikey is explaining to Simeon Joey how he was pissed off at his girlfriend when they were at a club the other night. So Mikey went into the men's room to blow off a little steam. No, it's not what you're thinking. Mikey washed his hands and then decided to rip the sink off the wall. He was half complaining, half laughing how the water ruined his new suit. Come to think of it, Mikey never said what he did with that sink. Did he carry it out of the bathroom and walk around with it like some old-time cigarette girl at the Copacabana? Hey, yous need to wash your hands. No, I ain't got no towels. Get your own fucking towel, you asshole. Hey, wear this sink over your fucking head, you fucking asshole. Another thing about the boys back in New York, for some unknown reason, they always substituted Z's for the S's in words like asshole. I have no idea why. Now, as Mikey is explaining the art of barehanded plumbing, I'm looking discreetly, stealing looks, you might say, at Joey's date. She's very cute in that sort of peroxide blonde gun mall way. Nothing you'd bring home to mom, but quite pointy. What's pointy, you ask? It's a term I've invented to describe chicks of a certain look, and Joey's date had it. She was maybe 112 pounds, and almost every part of her came to a point. Her shoes, her fingernails, the corners of her eyes, her boobs. Now there's a half gallon of Johnny Walker Red on the coffee table in front of the crushed velour L-shaped sectional, and Joey's 112-pound pointy girlfriend is filling her tumbler with Johnny and chugging it like iced tea. And I'm thinking to myself, this chick's legs aren't just pointy, they're hollow too. It was incredible. She's out-drinking Joey the silverback gorilla by a factor of 5, and she's still upright. Suddenly, some chick screams, "Yo, everybody, it's New Year's!" I'm thinking, all eyes will turn to the TV, where Dick Clark is starting the 10-second countdown. Well, I was wrong. Instead of watching the ball drop, pistols are whipped from waistbands and ankle holsters as windows fly open, and it looks like a fucking war with the bananas, and I'm gonna die in it. The gats go out the window, point to the sky, and...
Hey, happy fucking New Year. You like noisemakers? I'll show you fucking... Listen to this noisemaker, you fucking asshole. Happy fucking New Year.
It was like Friday night in Fallujah. Well, after they emptied the magazines, they took their seats again. And I'm noticing Joey's pointy girlfriend isn't looking so pointy. In fact, her head is resting on Joey's pinstripe shoulder, and her eyes are almost closed. Okay, she had about a quart too much to drink, but still, she's a gun mall. She's probably one tough chick, right? Then something curious happens. There's a flume of thick, white fluid flowing from pointy girl's mouth down Joey's shoulder and pooling in his breast pocket. I'm wondering when he's going to notice and what his reaction will be. Then he reaches for a cigarette inside that breast pocket and notices his bratwurst-sized fingers are deep, deep into girlfriend's upchuck. He looks at his fingers, which are now webbed with what appears to be pancake batter. He blinks. I can see the synapses and neurons firing from his fingers trying to reach his brain. Those nerve impulses are telling him, Joey, your girlfriend is vomiting on your new Hugo Boss double-breasted. I look at her face and think, whoa, a pointy chick could do a Jimi Hendrix right about now. That puke is as thick as tomato paste. And if she sucks a wad into her lungs, suddenly... Joey's brain gets the message. And he's on his feet. When he stands, pointy girl falls over, face down, on the L-shaped crushed velour sectional. And Joey bellows, "You fucking bitch! Look what you done on my new suit!" Another chick, somewhat less pointy, rushes over, and she and my girlfriend pick up unconscious pointy girl and race her into the bathroom to revive her. Each has her under an arm, and her feet drag along the carpet. Suddenly, her eyes pop open, and she projectile vomits across the room onto the Sony where Dick Clark is smiling and waving live from Times Square.
Boss, look what she done to the TV. This bitch is embarrassing me.
Tony's dad was upper management, while Joey was strictly boiler room. Tony got it that the only person embarrassing Joey was Joey.
Shut the fuck up and look after your girlfriend, Joey. I can get another fucking TV, and Sue's dry clean up just fine.
Tony had a little class. But Joey's antecedents needed a few more thousand years of interbreeding with Homo sapiens before they were ready for civilization. Looking back, Pointy Chick's condition and Joey's chivalry really didn't slow the party down much. In fact, it was kind of anticlimactic after that 21-gun salute. So, after a few minutes in the bathroom with the two girls working on her, Pointy Chick was brought to a semblance of consciousness. She was returned to her spot on the crushed velour L-shaped sectional couch. And Joey, he disappeared somewhere, I don't know, probably renewing his membership in NOW. Now, I'm sitting about three ass-widths away from Pointy Chick, anticipating that just maybe she had not yet expelled the full 32 ounces of Johnny Red I'd seen her consume. And a slightly blurry Dick Clark appears to be winding down the show. Somebody must have wiped down the TV screen. And suddenly, with the force of a coconut from a tall palm tree, Pointy Chick's unconscious head falls into my lap, just as Joey weebles himself into the room. Now I'm pretty sure I'm dead. Joey's eyes were blazing, but they were so beady, so deep-set, I really wasn't sure whether he was staring at me or Pointy Chick. He glares at her unconscious head in my lap, then grabs one of her delicate wrists in one hand and her belt in another and hoists her across his shoulder, perfect legs in front, her bubble ass in the air, and her head, torso, and limp arms hanging down Joey's massive back. And he heads for the door. Well, this sudden change in position and altitude was just enough to trigger peristalsis in Pointy Chick. And once again, the pancake batter flows from her lips, this time down the back of Joey's pant leg. I have to know where he's taking her. So I follow. Out the front door he goes, out onto the street, where he plops Pointy Chick's semi-conscious body across the hood of his Lincoln like a dead deer. Then he fishes the key from his pocket and opens the rear door and just airmails Pointy Chick into the back seat. Mikey the cruiserweight has now joined me on the front stoop to gawk at this scene.
Hey, Joey, don't be sitting down that town car to use cleans the puke off of your ass.
Ooh, Joey looks behind himself and sees he's once again been anointed by Pointy Chick's pancake batter. In renewed fury, he wheels around and brings his fist down on the hood of his car. I mean, it puckers like it's been hit with a wrecking ball. I was actually a bit surprised it didn't flip like a tiddlywink, like in that Hellboy movie. Joey jumps in and floors it into the snowy night. But they find Pointy Chick's body in a dumpster, an alley, or the river. I looked at Mikey, but I thought I'd better not ask him. Now I'm really ready to leave. But the girls have, as they call it, coffee and cake. There are probably some cannolis and Napoleons on the table as well. It's always de rigueur. Wrap up to those little gatherings. They talk about their clothes and hair and nails, and then about how shitty the clothes, hair, and nails are of their friends who couldn't make the party. And finally, coats are being donned when the doorbell rings. It's about 2:30 a.m. It's not FedEx with a late delivery.
Columbo's with a hand grenade? FBI raid? Do the feds even ring doorbells? Tony nods at Mikey, who whips his heater from his ankle holster and looks through the peephole.
It's fucking Joey!
The door opens and Joey enters. Only Tony has the balls and the authority to ask the multi-million-dollar question.
Joey, how's your date? I took that bitch home to her mother's and I told her she was an embarrassment and she should learn to hold her fucking liquor.
Is that it? Asked Tony.
No, I told her Happy New Year, of course.
And so with the fragrance of gunpowder infused in my Christmas sweater, my girlfriend and I departed Tony's house.
Yep, that was definitely my most memorable New Year's Eve. Could front row seats for Bruno Mars top that? No. Wherever you are this December 30th, whether at the summit of your dreams or the pit of your darkest nightmare, remember, it's just some ink on the calendar. Years are arbitrary markers created by men, as meaningless as yesterday's news or the latest worthless cryptocurrency. Time is a continuum. It has never paused, and it never will. Whether the stroke of midnight finds you with a lip lock on a supermodel, or kissing your dachshund as you binge-watch Seinfeld, it matters not. This unstoppable sphere continues to rotate at 1,000 miles an hour and hurtle through space at 67,000 miles an hour, same as it always has. To it, volcanoes are zits, earthquakes are a slight itch, a hurricane's a bead of sweat. It does not know or care about our contrived calendar or any of our trifling events. World wars, pandemics, Super Bowls, World Cup, soccer, kings, or presidents. The sphere is oblivious to it all. Maybe we should be, too. At least some of the time, huh? For sanity's sake. Years ago, there was a monster hit self-help book entitled Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. Subtitle, It's All Small Stuff. Especially New Year's Eve. Which I intend to ignore, as I usually do. And with that, I will wish you a most excellent Old Year's Night. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Our sixth New Year's together. Visit thatlarryshow.com for hundreds more episodes, and while you're there, be sure to click the subscribe button so you never miss one. And leave a 5-star review wherever you download. It helps the show grow. If you enjoyed what you just heard, why not click the Patreon or PayPal buttons? And help me keep the show going. It's a great way to start the new year. Follow the show on the new, improved Twitter and the old and still highly censored Facebook. We have a lot of fun there between episodes. Just plug That Larry Show into the search bar. You'll find us. I will see you next Wednesday or thereabouts. And until that time, take no shit.